you know, as society, we've forgotten what to do with birth and death because of the big business that is the medical system, right? So it's like we've forgotten as a society what to do, and our bodies know what to do when we're passing. Like, you know, there's this like wisdom and this like innate intuitiveness that we all have, and like we do know what to do when the time comes. But a lot of people, we're just kind of taught not to trust ourselves, right? And so it's a big societal shift, and it will take many generations to remember how we used to do it.
Hello, and welcome to all of you beautiful souls tuning in today to the Heart of the Soul podcast. I'm your host, Amana, and I'm so happy that you're here. This is a space where we remember what it means to be wild women walking upon this earth, navigating the ebbs and flows of the seasons of our lives, honoring each other's differences, and connecting about that which unites us. Together, we practice using our voices in the ancient ritual of storytelling, sharing our stories, and celebrating how they too shift and change across time. It's my hope that after soaking in these stories, you will feel more connected and less alone. Today, at the time of this recording, is Friday, November 4th, 2022. It's a little bit after 10 a.m. where I am here in Eastern Washington, currently in my mother-in-law's bedroom. And this morning, we awoke to our very first snow of the season, a beautiful white blanket across the land, transforming the world around. And as I gaze out the window right now, the snow continues to fall. For me, today feels like such a magical day, a day of milestones, one being the airing of my story on the Free Birth Society podcast, which I've been a huge fan of for years, and it felt really surreal to be invited to add my voice into that space. And my guest today is a beautiful woman that I have looked up to and learned from for the last few years. She inspired me and gave me the tools to start this podcast through her Empowered Podcaster offering. So I just feel completely ecstatic and a tiny bit nervous to have the opportunity to have her here and soak in her stories. Without further ado, I have Danielle Sarang with me through the cosmos on Zoom. Danielle has an incredible podcast called Spirit School for the Developing Lightworkers of the World. I took her course called The Initiation, which gave me a new language to express and understand what I'd been experiencing for years in the realm of spirit. So Danielle, I'm just so grateful to you and all the ways you've inspired and taught me and so many others. You're such a beautiful light and mentor that the world so needs. So thank you. Thank you for all that you do and for being here today. And if you'd like to take a moment to introduce yourself in whatever way that feels good to you before we sort of move into more conversation and stories.
Yeah, thank you for that incredible intro, and congratulations on the launch of your podcast and already getting some guest spots on some other podcasts. That's incredible. So thank you for shouting out the Empowered Podcaster as well. It's a course I'm like incredibly proud of, and the workbook itself was something that just came through within an hour. I knew it was completely like channeled in sorts of ways, and I'm really glad it's helped launch almost 100 podcasts already. So I'm really excited about that. Thank you. So congratulations. I introduce myself differently in every space, and today I feel like just simply saying, you know, my name is Danielle Sarang. I'm also known as the Squamish Medium. I am Swampy Cree First Nations of York Factory, Manitoba, living in the Coast Salish territories of the Squamish Nation people. I am a mother of two, and I discovered my mediumship abilities after the birth of my first child in 2013, though it has always been in my awareness. Since my grandma passed, actually, I got a book at her funeral on mediumship. And, you know, looking back, I feel like the path has been calling me for a long time, but it wasn't until the transition into motherhood that I answered the call. And the past 9 years, as I enter into my 40s, has been nothing short of miraculous, beautiful, divine, expansive, trying, scary, courage building, character building. And it's just been the greatest joy to build Spirit School to be what it is, which I consider to be an ecosystem created to help lightworkers feel safe to play and express and try intuition and mediumship and, you know, whatever calls to you on for size, and just see how it works for you. So yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Wonderful. So yeah, I've heard you like speak about in your podcast and different spaces about how your sort of mediumship journey started after you birthed your daughter. I wonder if you could like share a little bit more about that. And like, did you always know you wanted to be a mom? Or how did that come to be?
Yeah, there's a lot there. Did I always want to be a mom? I'll answer that one first. I think so. You know, I eloped with a stranger when I was 18. I was very young. He was from the UK. I was way too young to get married, let alone elope. And, you know, we did actually try for a child then, and I ended up having my first of many, many, many miscarriages. And, you know, was divorced before I was 24. Met my husband a few years later. And, you know, it was one of those situations where like, I finally had like life settled down, and it was like the perfect time to try. It was like 27 before I kind of realized like, yeah, I think I want kids. And my husband, even before he asked me on a date, first thing he asked me was, do you want children? Cause he's 11 years older than me. And so he was, you know, approaching his 40s, and I was approaching my 30s, and we'd work together. And I said, yeah, I think I do. And that kind of led us on a journey of trying for 4 years and having multiple losses, and almost coming to the point of coming to acceptance that it probably won't happen for me, because there wasn't many more losses I could personally take. And a lot of the resolutions that the medical system had were very intrusive, and a lot of people were like, well, we could try this, but you're really young. And so I was just kind of, you know, letting nature take over. And it was a very hard time carrying my daughter, to be honest with you, because of all the losses I'd had before. I pretty much ignored the fact I was pregnant and leaned into my workaholism. I'm a very hard worker. I'm a very determined human being. And I've been in that mode my entire life. And I would just throw myself back into work. And then all of a sudden, in Canada, we're blessed to get a whole year off maternity leave as we transition into motherhood. And my company actually provided us with 100% of our pay as well. So I found myself with all this time for the first time in my life at 27. And, you know, it was the first time I'd seen Squamish in the daytime. It was the first time, you know, I experienced the community and how diverse and amazing it is. And it just so happened that somehow, I still have no idea how, I ended up with a ticket to see a medium demonstrate mediumship in Squamish, like on a Tuesday afternoon, which I would have never have been available before I had Katie Jane. And she was about a month old at this time. And my best friend came up to watch her so I could go to this event. And I almost didn't go because I was having so much fun connecting in with my friend, but I did go by myself. And I got the first connection, and my friend, I told her about how magical the experience was. I was like, this was just like John Edwards on TV. Like, I'd never seen anything like this. And it was just so interesting. And so my friend for my birthday bought me a private reading with this woman who was so incredible. And she said to me, you know, did you know that you're a medium? And I look back at the readings I had been getting since I was 17 years old, which is when I started getting mediumship readings, which again, should have been a sign, but I didn't take it as a sign. And every reader had told me that I had the gift of mediumship. But, you know, growing up the way that I grew up, and, you know, the mistakes that I chose to make in my life, like I never thought I was pure enough or, you know, religious enough to be able to be a voice for the voiceless, like the world of spirit. So I had a lot of healing to do on that journey, but it was really connecting in with this medium, having this space for the first time in my life, kind of deconditioning from like working so much for someone else, for like another company. And then she ended up just inviting me into one of her development classes, and she ended up being my mentor for 4 years, and I developed under her. And that's kind of how it started and unfolded. It was like a lot of synchronicity, a lot of opportunities. And again, when the path kind of presented itself and I started looking back on my life, I was like, wow, I think this path has actually been calling me for a very long time.
Wow. Yes, that's amazing. And you said that when she was little, you would like kind of create your space to be with spirit. And how did you like know how to do that? Or how did you like, yeah,
So I was, again, like, this is going to sound kind of funny, but for one, my daughter's the best sleeper you'll ever meet. Like, honestly, she was sleeping in her own room, her own bed at 3 months. She was sleeping through the night. I would have to like nudge her at 8 a.m. I'm like, are you going to wake up? She would have like 2-3 hour naps during the day. Like, this girl loves to sleep. So I actually found myself with like so much time. Especially when she was really young, because my go-to was always like work. And I mean, hundreds of emails, like the corporate space that I was working in. And so I had like so much time, to be honest with you. So it wasn't something I had to like carve out until I went back to work. That's when it got really complicated. And I had to kind of, you know, a year later, I changed so much over that year. And anytime I would put her down to sleep, I would do what I call sit with spirit. In mediumship, we're taught to sit in the power, but because I have like a really busy mind, and it took me years to develop enough trust with my body to be able to sit with it intimately and in that quiet, because it was very uncomfortable for me for a long time, I would do something a little bit more active called sitting with spirit. And I would just put her down for a nap, or she would go to bed for the night, and I would just take half an hour on my bed, and I would pull some cards. I would maybe meditate. I would listen to a visualization, and I would just carve in my development whenever I had those kind of more quiet moments when she would be sleeping. That's kind of how I made it work.
Yeah. And you, like, I actually didn't like understand the word medium until maybe just a few years ago, but it sounds like for you, it kind of came into your realm a little bit younger. And you, I feel like you've talked about watching John Edwards with like your parents. Is that true? So like, yeah, what was that like in your family? Cause like I grew up, they weren't Christian, they weren't spiritual. It was just like, I didn't have exposure to anything like that when I was younger.
Yeah. It's interesting because my grandma was a residential school survivor. We have a lot of conflict with organized religion intergenerationally. My mom's side also is like never religious in any way. So I actually do not have any religious background other than as a kid, like a really young kid, like before 10, I was obsessed with churches. I would go to all the churches in all the neighborhoods, and I would have Wednesday dinners there, Sunday school. I love Bibles. I love the paper in the Bibles. I would collect them. I would take Jehovah pamphlets and I would keep them. Like I actually wanted to study theology when I was a teenager, but I couldn't find theology teachings from a non-Christianity lens. And I wanted a completely unbiased world religion education. And I just couldn't find it. So growing up, like my household more or less talked about aliens and sci-fi. And it was a big like Star Wars house and Star Trek house. And even my dad still, he lives with me. He watches Ancient Aliens, like nonstop. So aliens was always kind of like the conversation in the house. So my biggest fears growing up was actually like alien abduction, not so much like, you know, sins or demons or anything like that. That wasn't in our awareness. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting when we started seeing John Edwards and Sylvia Brown on TV. I think we were all shocked. I think we were all like, wow, can you believe that someone can do this? And so we used to like VHS record them and watch them together as a family. And, you know, it's tough to say, because though mediumship does have its own organized religion called like spiritualism, I don't see a connection myself between mediumship and any kind of organized faith or religion other than spiritualism. But even that, you can develop in the spiritualist framework or you can develop without it. So it's not like it's the pathway to mediumship. It just is a pathway. And it is actually a really good space for people who maybe do come from more strict religious backgrounds and they want that kind of like segue into mediumship. I think it's a good space for some people to land in for sure. But I've never kind of connected mediumship to a spiritual faith or anything like that. It's just connecting with energy, which I think anyone can do.
Yes, I've heard you say that you feel like we're all natural mediums, and it's about uncovering those experiences or what. I feel like becoming a mother is like a huge transformative time in and of itself. And so I've been wondering also for you, like, did you feel like you had like a realignment of self in in that experience of becoming a mom. And at the same time, you speak to it as like, that's when you became a medium, not that you didn't have some sort of awareness of it before your daughter was born, but that you really sort of stepped into that role. Do you feel like it was intertwined or? Yeah.
I think when, and I asked, the latest round of the initiation just closed on Wednesday, so 2 days ago. And I asked people in that closing ceremony, I said, can you see now you're here and you have a better sense of what's going on? Can you see how this path may have been calling you throughout your life? And everyone was like nodding heads. Mm-hmm. They're like, yeah. And so I feel very much, I can clearly see at 17, 27, before I hopped on the spiritual path, and even seven, there's something about the seven numbers with me, but 7, 17, 27 were huge opportunities for me to hop onto the path. And I just chose not to. I got distracted and I went kind of somewhere else. And I feel like it was actually through the birth of my daughter. It was like this moment where it's like, okay, we got to get serious now. You can miss this. Like, let's hop on the path. And I feel like everything just turned out after that birth experience and having her, and then having all this like time and not having all these other responsibilities to maintain, giving me that space to follow those curiosities. And then after I made my first mediumship connection is when I actually felt the profoundness of mediumship, the responsibility of mediumship. And I made some declarations to the world of spirit. I said, I know that you have been leading me on this path for a long time, and I'm never leaving this path again. I am on it for the rest of my life. And that was like on the way home from that first mediumship connection. And looking at the timing of how this path has presented itself multiple times to me over the course of time, I feel that there is some sort of divinity on why I chose in my soul to hop on the path and take it a lot more seriously after the birth of my daughter. And I do definitely believe that, you know, I'm doing it for them and I'm doing it for their path. So I'm just here to learn what I can so that I can be of support for whatever they end up going through in their lives, which I do believe will be somewhat spiritual in nature, because why else would this really come out? You know, after the birth of my first child. So,
Yeah. And then, so a few years later, you conceived your son, and it was during his pregnancy that you had your near death experience.
Yes.
Is there anything you might want to share about that and how that has shaped your world and your path?
Yeah. With my son, so struggling so much to get KJ, you know, 4 years, all these, like a lot of trauma, like a lot of, you know, a lot came up through that. When me and my husband, because, you know, he was, you know, getting up there in age, and, you know, I was getting up there in my career, we're kind of like, should we have another? Like, do we want to have another? We're both, you know, we both have siblings. So we were like, yeah, let's do it. Little did I know I was already pregnant. It's like, we joke that like, we literally thought about Nicholas and he came, you know what I mean? Like there was no struggle. There was no trying. It was like, it was beautiful the way that it unfolded. And this time I was going to do my pregnancy differently. This time I was like, you know, I'm connected to spirit. I'm practicing my mediumship. I was still not out in the public doing it. I was not out of the spiritual closet. This was 3 years into my development journey. Almost 3 years in. And it was a really difficult pregnancy. I got a lot of morning sickness with him. I was still trying to do my mediumship. I had committed to a whole bunch of psychic fairs with my mentor, and I was always fully booked out for those when those were like 9-day reading or 9-hour reading events. And I found myself in this pregnancy being constantly sick. And I kind of went into the pregnancy thinking like, I'm going to be closer to the divine than I've ever been before. Mm-hmm. I'm like carrying a child. I am like a creator in herself. And it couldn't have been further from the truth. I couldn't have been more in my humanity during that pregnancy than anything else. I actually kept getting sick. And then we had an opportunity to go to New Zealand, where my husband's from, for a month, and bring my daughter, because she was still free to fly. So I'm like, we're going before she's not free to fly to New Zealand. And in New Zealand, I kept getting migraines. It was horrible. And I was so sick, and we couldn't really go anywhere. I felt so bad for my husband, but he just wanted to hang out with his mom anyways. And by the time I got back from New Zealand, I was laying in bed one night And all of a sudden I broke into like a fever and I was home alone with my girl. And, you know, I still had the migraine. It had been there for like 10 days constantly. Like I couldn't get rid of it and like really, really painful. And then I ended up calling 911 and I got rushed to the hospital. And, you know, the next 2 weeks in the hospital were really a blur. But I remember I had a migraine for probably about 3 months. In total. And at the hospital, they gave me spinal taps, like CT scans, like MRIs. I was in neurological critical care. The way that they described it to me was like, you know, when you hear that people used to die of fevers, like that's where you were at. Like that's where you were at. And I was very limited being, you know, 4.5 months pregnant, what my treatment options were. And I remember going days without food and like days without sleep. Even with some of the medicine that they were able to give me, morphine wouldn't touch it, nothing. And I remember laying in this room where only people with full hazmat suits could come in because they just didn't know what was wrong with me. And they thought it was like bacterial meningitis. And I remember coming into acceptance, like, okay, I think this is how I go. Like, I think like this is the end. And then things went really blurry for me and a couple of days passed. And next thing I knew, I was like in a maternity ward and like starting to recover. And in the truth, they never knew what was wrong with me. Still to this day, they don't know what happened. They don't know what disease I had or what was wrong, but it was like this really trying experience. And the most heartbreaking part of that experience was when I came home from the hospital, my parents said I didn't ask about KJ once. Like that's how out of it I was and how sick I was. And like that to me was like, I don't know why that devastated me so much. I was like, wow, like it was a really scary moment. And I ended up not being able to go back to work. And I ended up with gestational diabetes and like everything you could get in a pregnancy. Like I ended up having, and my son ended up having to come out a month early because he got so big with my diabetes. It was like, you know, insulin dependent. He was like 9 pounds and he was a month early, this little guy, and he was not a good sleeper. So he's thrown our family for a huge loop, this little Libra dude. But I couldn't do any mediumship during that pregnancy. I couldn't do any development. I still attended retreats. I still attended a retreat with Tony Stockwell and with Mavis Patilla. I actually organized them, but I wasn't able to practice or to get my energy up there. So it was actually a really trying time for me. But funny enough, coming out of that, and it was like my son came out and I recovered from the C-section, and I kind of had this like determination I'd never had before with my mediumship, where I said, you know what, I have a year now off again, and I got the pay again, and I'm not messing around anymore. I'm not wasting any more time. I'm not hiding anymore. I'm coming out. So that was actually a catalyst for me to start Squamish Medium and put up a Instagram and like let the world know I'm here to do some readings. And, you know, with by the time I left my maternity leave, I had a year and a half wait list to work with me.
Amazing. Amazing. I feel like you've sort of spoken little threads through this about also, you know, like death, like having those early births. And I feel like birth and death are so, you know, like two sides of the same, the light and the dark, and birth and death. One doesn't happen without another. And I know that you are also a death doula and have worked with people through grief and those processes. And I wonder how did you feel drawn to that work, and any experiences that you might want to share about your experience with death and supporting people as they're dying and the loved ones around them?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, it was indirectly related why I wanted to go into end of life doula work. I was working at a First Nations health and wellness organization for quite a few years, and I was very privy to how our Indigenous people are not respected in the colonized medical system when it comes to their customs and protocols, when it comes to death and dying, and a lot of trauma, a lot of tragedy that persists through those systems. And, you know, I knew that my workplace was collaborating with Douglas College on the end of life doula program to honor you know, Indigenous death protocol and to take into consideration people's culture. So I really wanted to be part of that change as well. Like there's a little social justice warrior in me for sure. And then in mediumship, I think to be a rounded medium, you need to study things even outside of mediumship as well. And when I looked at, you know, the clients that I was serving and the way that I was serving, you know, you need a great sense of empathy to be able to do this work. And at that point in time, when I first started studying my end of life doula studies in 2020, I had never experienced grief, other than disenfranchised grief, which was like the loss of a husband or, you know, the breakup of a marriage, or like a friend saying that they don't want to be friends with me anymore, or telling a place that I love to work that I don't want to work there anymore. Like, I experienced like that type of grief, but I never experienced grief from the loss of a loved one. So I thought it was responsible for me to learn about grief and like the science of grief so that I could support people more in my mediumship, because I would have people who clearly were experiencing grief. And though I was able to have a certain level and a lot of compassion towards somebody, I couldn't have that empathetic experience, that empathy. And it kind of made me uncomfortable a little bit, because I was like, wow, I don't know what you're experiencing. And so it's hard for me to be able to like support you through this. And so I would just like refer to different grief therapists, which I still do and I still think is important. But I ended up wanting to study the end of life doula studies to understand grief. That was my original intent for taking that course and doing that. Because the truth is, having two young kids, I can't be on call. And obviously, people don't pass away between 9 and 3, right? Like when the kids are at school. So I didn't know what role I could hold within death doula work, because visualing would not be part of what I would be able to do. But through the end of life doula studies, which I can't shout out this program enough, Douglas College, it's all across Canada. It's one of the only programs, maybe even the only program, that the hospital system recognizes the certification for. So just to give people a heads up in Canada around that. But it was such a beautiful program. It was one of the most life-affirming experiences I'd ever had. And when I found out the multitude of work that death doulas could go into when it comes to death and dying, I fell in love with legacy, and I fell in love with normalizing death conversations. So my role as an end of life doula, I have helped people online, because of course the pandemic happened right after, and they weren't letting family in with people who were dying, let alone end of life doulas. So I don't know what's happened with that industry since things have really opened up, but I have supported people online through their terminal diagnoses and just giving them space to talk about, you know, the end and like what their beliefs are. And, you know, is there things that you have left unsaid? Like, what kind of legacy do you want to leave? Like, do you want to create something that your family can remember you by? Like, how do you want to pass? And how do you want to have these conversations? And I have supported people who haven't had access to medical assistance in dying, mostly in the States. They don't have, a lot of states don't give people access who have horrific terminal illnesses. And there's a lot of pain and trauma that comes from people who are denied access for something that is accessible in many other places. There's like an inhumanity behind it. And so I've helped a lot of people who going through like that complicated emotions and experience. And I'm just somebody that they can talk to about it, because their families are going through enough. They don't have a lot of people in their sphere that they can talk about their greatest fears and their greatest regrets too. So I'm just kind of one of those resources for them. And then just working with different people on legacy projects and things that they want to leave behind so that their family can have something to remember them by. And then just being an advocate in the public space and utilizing my influence to encourage conversations around death and dying, to start normalizing it, because our society glorifies youth in very unhealthy ways, and we are avoiding a very important conversation that connects us all.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that feels definitely like part of my life's work as well. Like, I'm in the birth world and fully in the death world too. And it's been so interesting to like most of the death I've experienced. Well, the first death I experienced was outside of the hospital, and it was my first love, and it was in a home setting, and I'm grateful for that. And most of the death I've seen after that is in hospital settings and supporting people there. And I think back to like our ancestors that like had the opportunity to birth and die more often at home before we had colonized the medical system. and where that is where most people are dying. You know, I worked in palliative care for 5 years, and most people say that they want to die at home, and yet where 90% of people are dying in hospitals or medicalized facilities. So
I find a lot of that is also due to just us being unprepared as a society to manage that at home. Like, a lot of the times people do have requests to die at home, and that comes through a lot in my readings, by the way. I get a lot of people coming through just saying, thank you for allowing me to pass at home, and thank you for kind of figuring it out. Because what happens is a lot of the family members who are the caretakers, you know, as society, we've forgotten what to do with birth and death because of the big business that is the medical system, right? So it's like we've forgotten as a society what to do, and our bodies know what to do when we're passing. Like, you know, there's this like wisdom and this like innate intuitiveness that we all have, and like we do know what to do when the time comes. But a lot of people, we're just kind of taught not to trust ourselves, right? And so it's a big societal shift, and it will take many generations to remember how we used to do it.
Absolutely. I think it's such an important thing to be like witnessing the start of this shift. And I feel like it will continue on. And the more that we talk about it, the more that we can normalize that death is a part of life. You know, we come to go, no one stays here and continues to live, that we all die, and no one is guaranteed tomorrow even. And yet the culture really wants us to focus on living and prolonging life at all costs. But I feel like I've witnessed the harm and the pain that that can cause. And so I'm grateful to people like you that are willing to bring up the conversation of death and to talk about it in different ways, and remembering the ways that are possible to die. And like you said, our bodies know how to die. We know how to birth, just like we know how to poop or like eat, or, you know, like,
absolutely.
We've created this, a lot of fear around both birth and death, and feeling like we need outsider input so much in those times. And I love having the opportunities to turn people back into themselves and their own answers, knowing that so many of them just lie within, and I can just help reflect that back to them.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm glad, you know, thank you for all your service and doing that through your palliative nursing, as well as like continuing that with your end-of-life doula, because, you know, the society keeps us very busy. And, you know, my brother went through a medical crisis this year. The hospital told us he was going to die. They had us come say our goodbyes to him, and he ended up getting spinal meningitis, and he was in critical care, and there was like 10 beds. And luckily I have my own company now, so I was able to take the whole month off to be by his side every single day, 7 days a week. The second I dropped the kids off at school, I would stay until I had to go home. And when I was kind of in that space, and my parents would take like the evening shift. So, you know, we're Indigenous, my brother's an addict. So it's like the hospital system does not treat Indigenous people well, let alone addicts well. So we needed to make sure that the doctors and nurses knew this person is loved and he has a family, and so that he got excellent care. I think because we chose to be there every single day. And looking around, it was so sad talking to some of the other families, because they couldn't be with their loved ones because of the other responsibilities that society really pushes on us. Like 9 to 5, you get 2 days to bereave, or, you know, in a good company, maybe you get like 2 weeks or something like that. And, you know, applying for some, you know, financial assistance with, you know, compassion leave is like, it's such a loophole, and it's not accessible to people who are very intimidated or have neurodivergencies that can't navigate some of these incredibly complex language documents and pathways to get some sort of assistance and help. And so, you know, I think like my goal is with the end of life doula work is, as my kids get older and as I create something that doesn't require 100% of me all the time, I do hope to get more into that visualing and to be able to sit with people. That's the eventual goal. It's just not, life's not set up for that now, but I see a need for it because family is actually less available now than ever before to be able to be with their loved ones.
Yeah. In the hospital that I worked in, there was a program that I can't remember the name. Oh, No One Dies Alone, where they had volunteers that were able to come and sit with people who didn't have family there.
I love that.
You know, took different, you could sign up for, you know, a few hour shift or whatnot. And I'm grateful for things like that. And for, you know, in palliative care in the hospital, it was sort of like you spoke a little bit to it earlier about how hospitals often don't honor like the cultural practices and like smudging inside of a hospital room. And that's something that I would help people to have access to and do within the hospital.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, things are shifting and yet there's still a long ways to go.
I know. That's one of the hardest things about this phase, isn't it? It's like, you know, doing all this really deep work and just coming to acceptance, we may not see the whole ripple effect of like what we're trying to do here, but like leaning into trust that it matters. And in the very long game, it will all matter. The kindness and the generosity and the selflessness, I guess, right?
Yeah. And we're continuing to like be the change by speaking about it, by supporting people through it. And I just think that's really important and beautiful. And I also, this is totally sort of a shift in topic, but also similar, because I love how you've been really open about the way that you run your business and the way that you choose to work like with your monthly cycle and life in its current flow. And I feel like this is also a change that a lot of people, especially people that are like, yeah, work a lot and think that they have to work throughout the whole month, all the different days. And I would love if you can share a little bit about how in your entrepreneurship, you came into this different way of being with your monthly bleed and choosing to be different with the work that you chose to do and not do throughout that cycle.
Yeah. Entrepreneurship for me, I just expand every time I think about it, because as somebody who was convinced I would work 9 to 5 for the rest of my life, and there's nothing wrong with the 9 to 5. And I think that we need all light workers at all levels of society and government. And, you know, I'm not someone who's like, quit your job, like quit the 9 to 5. I used to be a little bit, but now I realize how much more we need light workers in those spaces. But I think entrepreneurship is just so creative and it's freeing in that creativity. It's like, you know, I'm not artistic in any way, in the sense of like, I can't draw, I can't even read my own writing half the time, and I don't write music, and I'm not musical, and I'm not like an actor. What I consider to be creative, I am not. But then when I started doing entrepreneurship, and it's just like mediumship, it's like, let's play, like, let's just see how this feels. Like, let's not, you know, commit ourselves to this so hard that we can't be flexible enough to like pivot or change things. And, you know, I actually come into everything in my business knowing I'm going to try this for a hot minute and I'm going to shift it after according to how the experience was. So like, I love things changing and like evolving. Like even my membership, it's, you know, every 3 or 4 months I change up the format there too, just for my own creativity. And so my own excitement with the scheduling, you know, that has been evolving thing. And I think it's going to continue to evolve, because I tell you guys to pay attention to like your readings and like, you know, when do you love doing them? Like, when do you feel most excited for them? When do you have your most energy? Is that the morning? Is that the afternoon? Is that a weekend? Is that a weekday? Is there a day of the week? Is there a time of the month? Is there a season? And trying to get people to be very aware of their own personal cycles so that they can set up their life to be one that's a little bit more easy, if possible, because there's so much in society that is not easy and we don't have control over. But guess what we do have control over as entrepreneurs is our schedule, our prices, who we choose to be in collaboration with or proximity with. Like, there's so much choice and freedom with it. So for me personally, you know, after the birth of my son, it took me a couple years, but I ended up with a diagnosis of PMDD. And that's, you know, I have a very severe case of it. And I recognized it when I was in the corporate world, because I would literally fire people. I didn't have enough power to fire people, but I would be like, I can't have them on my team. I need someone else on my team. Like, I was just so angry. I had just so much anger, and I didn't actually see that pattern for a very long time. And then when I finally worked with a therapist very consistently, I mentioned the corporate space only because when I got diagnosed, I had to start telling my bosses about my condition so that I could pre-warn them. I would say, you know, I might act completely out of character a couple of days a month, and I actually don't realize it's happening until I'm on the other side of it. Like, I'm completely oblivious to it. But I have it reflected back on me. I'm a completely different person during those times, right? So I would have to be super transparent and disclose about it. For everyone's safety. So in the entrepreneurship space, I would continue to push through and just commit to working while my kids were at school, which was 5 days a week, and try to have evenings and weekends free to be with them. But I also found in that time, I would have the same thing. I would have outbursts. I would have I'd be out of my integrity every once in a while, where I would be mad at someone for hardly anything. And so I decided that for everyone's safety, because as well in, the position I'm in as a teacher and mentor, it's despite myself always trying to tell people, don't put me on a pedestal, don't put me up there. People typically do. And it can be painful when somebody that you trust and that you admire and you see in a certain way, all of a sudden is like this, but that's just part of my condition. So I decided to, take time every single month. If I could track it closely, and if I could maybe avoid being in contact with people during those days, that might actually be a very good thing for everybody. So this year I started to experiment with Goddess Week, and that's what I ended up calling it to make it very positive for myself. And so, I had years of tracking my cycle, and I was able to predict for the most part what the next few months would hold. And so I started taking the whole week off before my cycle, off completely, because once my bleed time starts, I'm good to go. It's for me, it's the 4 or 5 days leading up to it. It can be really hard, but then I also am finding myself in another shift where, I'm in my 40s now, and all of a sudden I'm finding myself in a place where my cycle is, is stretching from 26 days into 35 days and sometimes 44 days. And it's becoming harder and harder and harder to predict. And, it's been tough. So even now I'm looking ahead at next year. I'm how am I going to manage this next year? Because for the past 6 months, every other month has been very different. And I have been forced to work during my PMDD time. Because you can only plan so much, but I talked to the version of myself that wants to be hard on myself for getting it wrong, or not staying on top of it. Or is my cycle changing because of my personal health choices or the stress I'm putting myself under? When Roe v. Wade was announced, the breakdown I had was astronomical. Mm-hmm. And it actually, the emotion that I felt caused me to skip a whole cycle. The rage, the outburst, and I did it on Instagram. People saw it. I'm so mad right now. Women are under attack around the world. And I still think to this day that is true. Mm-hmm. And the anger that I felt, right? And then same with the Texas school shooting, I had the same thing. The anger I felt as a mother, it was so much anger. It actually pushed my cycle out. Right. And so I've had a couple of things kind of come up, and it becomes a little bit more or less predictable. But what I do say to myself is you're still giving yourself Goddess Week. You're still giving yourself this space every single month to not be everything to everybody and be accessible here and here and here. And really just taking this time to honor myself. And as I look towards the, crone years and the years that my bleed will no longer be, I can still see the importance of giving myself that space to be messy or emotional, or, just be this other side of me that is always going to be here, if that makes sense.
Yeah. When you spoke to like the Goddess Week, I feel like it also just, when you were speaking about it, just made me think of sort of stepping out of the doing as much during that week and having the space to be more into the being, whatever that is for you in that moment of time, whatever feels good. And I think that is so beautiful and inspiring. And we live in such a patriarchal world where we're, as women, expected to function like men who are, you know, steady throughout the month. And as women, we're just not. That's not the type of creatures that we are. We're, you know, cycling each month and, you know, our hormone shift and change as we begin our bleed. And then as you're speaking to, as our bleed begins to fade away in perimenopause and then menopause and into the crone. And I have heard a lot of women talk about how they don't hear like those stories enough, especially about the shift into menopause. And so I love that you bring it up. I think it is needed to be heard, those stories, and for other people to know about the natural, normal shifting and changes and the ways that we are as women across time. So thank you.
Thank you. Yeah. No, I think it's an important conversation.
Yeah. Is there anything else in particular that's stirring your soul right now that you would like to share before we close?
I would say too, you know, I work with a lot of men as well. I do, you know, I used to work with race cars. I was very masculine in corporate space. I was like a boss, you know. Actually the last job I had was the first time I ever worked with women before. Cause since I graduated from high school, I ended up in race car teams. And I noticed too, when I work with even men, that they do have like their cycles. It's kind of interesting. And, you know, spirit really brought to my awareness the work with the moon in 2016. I think they were trying to get me to learn how to hold space for circles and stuff, because I was like, I know nothing about the moon. Like, what are you talking about? And so all of a sudden I go home and like, there's this book on new moon astrology where I was like, oh. And then I ended up like writing blog posts for a website for years about the new moon. And I had a moon course at one time, but I'm not an astrologer. I leave that work really up to the people who really study astrology now. But you know, if we are made of so much water and we know that the moon influences the waters of the world, we're all going to be cyclic beings no matter what. And my hope is that like with the way that things are shifting, that people just become a little bit more aware of their cycles as a general, like seasonal, annual, moon, weekly, daily, hourly, because we can be so much more forgiving on ourselves and give ourselves a whole bunch of more, like, you know, permission slips to just like be ourselves, and also being a little bit more generous and accepting of other people as well, and like where they might be in their cycles too. Because I think when it comes down to it, a lot of like the conflict that we may feel with other people could just be like a mismatch in our own personal cycles, and they're just like not driving. Like me, my husband, I see through 15 years of marriage, you know, every time we come around summer, that's like our annual cycle. Like it just never works out. Like we couldn't see how different we are any other time of the year than summer, when I got skin conditions, I can't be out in the sun, but he's like a beach bum. And, you know, our own personal cycles. And it's like, I could gripe on that and see every single summer as being like a time when like we almost like reach divorce and I question the relationship, or I can lean into it and say, you know what, he's in his beach bum cycle. And he needs the space and freedom to get that vitamin D. And, you know, so I just think like there's so much there that I still am learning to uncover around like the cycles and how we be with one another and how we treat one another and how we, you know, think one another. Because and the other thing I notice around this too is like I get criticized sometimes for like my boundaries, which are also kind of like running in cycles. And I feel like defensive sometimes, because I'm like, but if you knew about my cycles, like if you knew, like we talk during like this time, and it's actually like that's a version of me, but that's not me all the time. And being a little bit more gracious around that and like forgiving of that. And that's something that I've had to do with other people is like, when I feel like attacked by someone, or I feel like somebody's being unkind to me, or, you know, judging me in some way, that initial, you know, undeveloped thought is always like, it's unfair, it's unjust, right? But then now I'm so aware and permissive of myself around my cycles, I actually engage with other people a lot differently and a lot more freely and a lot more openly. So just kind of for people who listen, because I know, you know, just given the topic, they'll be mostly women who listen to this, but women who may be in relationship with men romantically or in a power dynamic of some kind through like a workplace, and just like understanding that like men do go through cycles as well. And I feel almost bad that they're not aware of it as much, because like, since I've become so aware of it, I see it so clearly in my husband and I think it's just it's a fun concept that I'm just continuing to dive deeper into, and I think that's it.
Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you for unearthing some more wisdom within that and sharing more about that. I agree. I've also witnessed the cycles in my husband and in my children as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. So please tell everyone where they can find you, a bit about your services you provide, your collective space, anything else. And have links in the show notes below.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate that. So my podcast is kind of where you can experience more of my teachings. I hold nothing back on my podcast. It's called Spirit School. I also have a free community called Spirit School. Thanks to Amanda, actually, you know, she joined the initiation program. She's like, I don't want to be on Facebook. I'm like, yeah, me neither, Amanda. And like, that was actually the last time we ever ran that program on Facebook, and my team pitched me Mighty Networks, and I absolutely am obsessed with it. And we just ran the initiation, and it's like night and day experience. So, you know, within that space of Spirit School, it's a free community, but that's where I house all my courses and my programs, and my membership is all within that one space, which is off social media, which I'm obsessed with. So thank you for being a catalyst to kind of like push us into that a little bit more with your comment. I was like, no, she's right. I'm like, who wants to be on Facebook anymore? I'm like, really? I go on there if I need like advice. Like if I'm like, you know, where can I get clay in Squamish? And like people tell me where to get like clay in Squamish. That's kind of how I use Facebook now. But on Instagram, I am a lot more active. I do love Instagram, but I'm very boundaried there too. I only post when I feel like it. I mostly hang out in my stories, but that's at Squamish Medium. And I have some exciting things coming up next year. I have, we're opening up our first physical location for Spirit School. I'm hosting my first retreat in Maple Ridge next year, and I'll have lots of retreats at the new school. I'm collaborating with some of my incredible students on a program called the Trauma-Informed Lightworker, which will be a certification program that's coming up. And of course, the initiation, and I'm creating a 2.0 on demonstrating and group readings and psychic work as well. There's always a million and two things happening in my world. And of course, my membership, which is the Spirit School Collective, where we do practice circles almost every week. And I teach classes on, like this month, I'm doing a Q&A on death doula work. And last month I did one on entrepreneurship. So, you know, it's for all light workers of all modalities and people who just want to practice and have, you know, community of people in a similar position in space. So all that can be found within Spirit School.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for your time today. As I begin the closing of this episode, I am delighted to tell you about this limited time offer, the gift of a short psychic reading for you in exchange for a review of The Heart of the Soul on Apple Podcasts. As each of you are unique, the reading will be as well. I can share that many women express their experience with words like held, witnessed, loved, connected, aligned. They feel increased trust in themselves. They feel seen and often feel more centered with clarity about their purpose and path in this life. You can check out full reviews written about my readings on my mediumship offerings page. Your reading will be given through a voice message on email. What I need from you is a screenshot of the review you have written and a short voice or video message of yourself introducing yourself to me, first stating and then spelling out your name. send it to me via email at amana@birthingnova.love. I will use this information from you to record a voice message reading for you that will be about 10 to 15 minutes in length, a nearly $40 to $50 value, as my 30-minute readings are $111 US dollars. I will send your reading back to you as soon as I possibly can. And thank you for tuning in today. If you love the podcast, I'd be so grateful if you choose to subscribe, rate, review, or share the show. If you feel aligned with my energy and are wanting to tap into your wild side, birth your baby wild and free, I support women just like yourself all over the world. To learn more or book your free clarity call with me, go to my website, www.birthingnova.love. Also, if you would like a full mediumship reading, you can book one through my website as well. I would love to connect with you. Until next time, remember to be brave, be bold, be love, be you, and be the change that you seek for yourself and for the generations to come. Love, 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 everyone.